Good morning. So this morning we're going to continue on our Heroes of Faith lessons that we have been doing here. It's been an interesting, awesome study so far. And the Heroes of Faith, they demonstrate to us a lot of different things. And so far as we've been studying, especially through the Genesis characters, we see how faith can open the eyes of the blind and how it can raise people from the dead and the incredible things that it can do because our God has that sort of power. So that story kind of all culminates at the end of Genesis with the story of Joseph and his brothers. So we meet these characters in Genesis 37, and it's this, you know, we're coming out of this family that's a little bit dysfunctional. Between Jacob having four different wives and 12 kids from those wives, it gets a little bit testy in there, and then there's deception, there's lying, and it's just, it's kind of awful. But even despite the fact there's this so much family drama, God finds a way to provide not just for Joseph, but also for the rest of the world through it. So we're going to be starting our study in Genesis chapter 37, and you know we're going to start from there. So what happens, the introduction of the story, is that Joseph is the favorite child. It's pretty clear to his brothers. Jacob has a favorite wife, Rachel, and she's passed away by this point. But Rachel is, it was the life that he actually wanted in the beginning, and Laban tricked him. So he receives Leah as well, but Rachel is still his favorite. And the eldest child of Rachel is Joseph. So Joseph gets clear favoritism and clear favorite treatment, and that's why he receives this coat of many colors and incurs wrath and jealousy from his brothers. And it goes as so far as Joseph has these dreams about the sun and the moon bowing down to him and these wheat plants bowing down to him. And he tells his brothers this, and whether you think it was Joseph was doing innocently or whether Joseph was doing it to actually stir up more wrath, whatever it was, it just made it worse. And for me personally, like as an older brother, I can kind of understand when a younger sibling tells you that how much better they are than you. Even if they don't mean it in the most attacking way, it still hurts. So this idea goes through their heads, like, you know, how can we get back our brother? And that's where we arrive in Genesis 37. So if you want to turn over there, starting we're going to start in verse 12. It says, "Now his brothers went to their pasture near the father's flock, near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, 'Are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them.' And he said to them, 'Here I am.' So he said to him, 'Go now, see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word.' So he sent him to the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a man found him wandering in the fields, and the man asked him, 'What are you seeking?' And he said, 'I am seeking my brothers. Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock.' And the man said, 'They have gone away, for I have heard them say, "Let us go to Dothan."' So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan." So just off this little section here, we see clear favoritism. That Joseph isn't even out working with his brothers. We can kind of assume that he's of that age. He has the ability to go out and flock and tend the sheep, but he's at home with Jacob. So continuing on and starting in verse 18, it says, "They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. And they said to one another, 'Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. And they will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what has become of his dreams.' But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, 'Let us not take his life.' And Reuben said, 'Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand to restore him to his father.' So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore. And they took him and threw him in a pit. The pit was empty, and there was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, 'What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh.' And his brothers listened to him. Then many night traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. They took Joseph to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, boy is gone. And I, where shall I go? Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. Then they set the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, this we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not. And he identified it and said, this is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without a doubt torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son for many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, no, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him into Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. So what happens is that Joseph, whether it was his intention or not, and for a lot of the story, he is not to blame, but he has been storing up this anger and this jealousy, and finally it's unleashed. They're far away from their father. They can get away with a lot. So their first reaction is, well, we should just kill him. Here comes this arrogant dreamer who's tried to ruin our lives, who has taken away our favor from our own father. Why don't we just get rid of him? But Reuben, as a good, reasonable, logical older brother, says, no, we got to preserve him. And his plan later is to come back and save him. But they finally throw him in a pit. And then, by providence, this caravan comes by. And they're saying, well, instead of killing him, instead of just leaving him in this pit, why don't we just go and sell him, make some money off of this? So they do that. And this innocent man is sold into slavery because of envy and jealousy that has come up to this point. And you can only imagine what's going through Joseph's head at this time. That you're thrown in the pit, and now you're being sold off to a land and a nation. But it comes to this point, especially in the next story, that we see that what Joseph is thinking isn't the most negative outcome, which is sometimes what we go to. We just assume that, the situation we're in, God has left us or anything like that. But Joseph understands that no matter how far he is away from home, God is still with him. And that is the point that we should be emphasizing in our lives as well. So we see that pretty clearly over in Genesis chapter 39. What happens, starting in verse 2, it says, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended to him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in the house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. So Joseph leaves. He's sold into slavery, and he could have ended up in a lot of different awful positions, but he ends up in a pretty decent position with Potiphar. And as a servant in his hard work and his blessing, the blessing of God, he comes to a really high point that Potiphar literally doesn't have to worry about anything except the food that he eats. And this is the same that it should be for us. People should know that when they are associating with Christians, it is a blessing. So often we make other people's lives harder sometimes. But when God is actually with us, shouldn't we be showing that to people? So the blessing that comes upon him is not only just what Joseph is doing, but also that God is blessing this endeavor. But naturally it can't stay good forever. At the end of verse 6, it tells us that now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And she spoke to Joseph day after day, and he would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. But one day, when he went to the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of the household and said to them, see, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and he cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to among us came in to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." And as soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. So, the story here is Joseph is a young, attractive man. He's working in this situation. He's been blessed by God. But, you know, Satan is still there. Temptation is still there. And his master's wife comes at him day after day after day on the edge of temptation. One of the interesting contrasts I see is back a couple of chapters when you're talking about Jacob. When Rebecca says, "Hey, we should do this to deceive your father so that we can you can get the blessing instead of your brother." Jacob's excuse isn't, "Oh, well, this isn't the right thing to do." His excuse is rather, "Well, what if I receive a curse instead of a blessing?" Here, Joseph shows how you show your faith in this situation. Firstly, the master has been so merciful and kind to me, and I've been promoted, and, you know, how could I do this wrong thing to him? And two, more importantly, how could I commit this sin? How could I violate what God has given me? And those two things are extremely important. That's what happens when we sin, is we firstly rebel against God and the things that he has set for us. And also, we go against our fellow man and we treat them with less respect. So he asks, you know, this lady, "How could I possibly do this?" But she continues to pester him and pester him, but Joseph refuses. And finally, he gets to this point, you know, and he's still on the straight and narrow. And finally, she finds an excuse. She finds a way to blame him. She's been spited for so long, and now he leaves the garment after he's fleeing away from this temptation, and she uses it against him. Here we have another situation where a righteous person is suffering. And it seems completely unjust. And our reaction oftentimes is to get riled up and frustrated. You know, if I did what you asked me to do, God, why am I suffering? Why am I in this position? We don't see that Joseph asks those same sort of questions. He relies on God no matter which pit he was in. And we see that when you start reading again in verse 20. It says, "And Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed." So, sometimes our vision kind of gets to this point where we think that God is somehow prohibited by any hole that we're in, or prohibited by any jail cell, like he's restricted by those things. But here we see that God cares not of where Joseph is. It doesn't matter where he is, but God is still with him and still blessing him. So our attitude so oftentimes is when we face persecution or we face any sort of thing that goes on in this life, any type of suffering, our reaction sometimes is to get angry at God rather than to see what God is providing. And our attitude should be more like Joseph's, who is in the middle of this pit but still keeps working, and he still kind of rises up in this prison. And he's thankful to God. Some of the more comforting words in the Bible are words like this, when it says, "But the Lord." Here are these awful, terrible things that have happened to a person, or here are awful, terrible sins, but God. God is stronger than not only our sin, but also any temptation or frustration that happens on this world. And we should rely on him in all things, just as Joseph did. So while he's in this prison, he encounters these two men. They've been kicked out of the king's close group, the baker, his baker, and also his cupbearer. So these two men have pretty awful dreams one night, and Joseph interprets these dreams, and both of them come true. But we see here also that God isn't the one that's letting Joseph down. In verse 20 of chapter 40, it says, "On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed a cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." His father, his brothers, Potiphar, all the while, humans over and over and over are failing to lead Joseph in the right way. They are failing to show compassion and mercy to him. They are failing to love him as they ought to. They are failing to care about him. But the one who does not leave him is God. And that's the reality of all of our situations. We may be let down by this world. As a matter of fact, we will be let down by this world. That is the problem with it. It's sinful and people are corrupt and there's so many problems that come with that. But our God is greater than those things. And God provides through those things. So for 3 years, Joseph sits and is in this prison. The cupbearer has forgotten about him. The cupbearer doesn't really remember him. But in chapter 41, the Pharaoh has a dream. He has these really interesting dreams about cannibalistic cows and carnivorous wheat plants. It's just like, you know, it's one of those weird, bizarre things. And it's given to him twice so that Pharaoh knows that this isn't any ordinary dream. There's something to this. So he gets his diviners together, and they're like, okay, well, let's figure this out. Let's get together magicians, figure this out. And none of the answers gave Pharaoh any comfort. None of their answers, whether it was fake or they just couldn't give an answer, it was not helpful. So then the cupbearer is like, oh, yeah, I had this situation where I had a dream like this, and this guy in prison did it. So from prison, Joseph is grabbed to be taken in front of the most powerful person in their country, a person who people believed was a son of the gods. And Joseph interprets this dream with God's help, and also God gives him the wisdom to, okay, so what's coming is this famine. You're going to have 7 years of plenty, but after this there's going to be 7 years of famine. So the recommendation from me is to take, while we have plenty, to take of that and store it back. So thanks to God and the wisdom, Pharaoh rewards him. And we can see this in chapter 41 and verse 37. It says, "This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find a man like this, in whom is the Spirit of God?' Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Since God has shown you all this, and there is none so discerning and wise as you are, you shall be over all my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only in regards to the throne will I be greater than you.' And Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt.' And then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold chain around his neck. And then he made him ride in his second chariot, and they called out before him, 'Bow the knee.' Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt.' And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zephenath-Paaneah, and he gave him in marriage to Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt." What just happened here is a radical, insane change. Okay, cool, he's the leader of a prison, but he's still in prison. But now he becomes the second most powerful person in the most powerful country in the ancient Near East in a snap of a finger. Incredible. And in this rise, we see a lot of things that are provided to him. He's given the signet ring, which means, you know, that's laws. He can make laws and sign things in Pharaoh's name. He also receives a new cloak. And I think that's interesting because his cloak has been torn from him twice now, but God restores that to him. So he has that now. And people, like, this is kind of his dream fulfillment, that literally his chariot goes out and people are just yelling, like, bow the knee to this guy. He is in charge. So Joseph goes from this, you know, nobody Hebrew, taken in slavery, and then put in prison after something that wasn't his fault, but through it, now he's become the second most powerful and all the land. And we continue to see that Joseph doesn't lose his focus on God. If you want to look over in verse 50, it says, before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of his firstborn Manasseh. For, he said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. The name of the second is called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, and as Joseph had said. And there was a famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. What he says to you, do. So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe over in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain because the famine was severe over all the earth. So the name of his sons are both reminders of God's love for him, that God has made me forget about the things I suffered because he cares for me. And through all things, I can do God, things because God is strengthening, God is helping me. So it's really incredible that throughout this, Joseph is still holding fast to God who cares about him. And here we also see that this Hebrew slave now has not just preserved Egypt, but he's also preserved the entire world because everyone is going through this famine and people are coming to Egypt in order to be preserved. The blessing of the seed promise, the true seed promise of Abraham, is going to come way later. But you can kind of see that this is a part of it as well. Through one of your children, the entire world is blessed because everyone is going through this. And through this, the faithfulness of this servant, the entire world is being saved. So I think that the story of Joseph is just this incredible reversal. And we see throughout it too, Joseph does not lack faith. And even when his brothers come later, which, you know, that's an interesting story about hiding the cup and all these other things that happened, he tells them that, you know, brothers, I understand that what you did this for was because of your jealousy and your frustration, your anger with me. But what God meant it for was good. And that's the same situation that we need to be thinking about, that we may encounter situations in our lives where we get frustrated and we get fed up, and things go awfully. And that is other people and Satan using that for ill. They're using it for evil. But God, through it, he isn't stopped by evil. And he can provide even through that. But when we turn over to Hebrews, you know, that the story of Joseph, we love that story. It's a really great story. It's one that we love teaching our children. It's great. But when we turn over to Hebrews, in chapter 11, when we read about Joseph, it says in verse 22, by faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. What? Like, you're telling me that he went from Egypt, or he went from his homeland to Egypt as a slave, unfairly, and then he went through all this other stuff and kept his faith in God just for you to say that the best thing he did was concerning his bones? Well, let's get some perspective on what the Hebrew writer is saying if you want to turn over to Genesis chapter 50. The last chapter of Genesis, the end of the story, the end of this opening story. In verse 22, it says, so Joseph remained in Egypt, and he and his father's house. Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were counted as Joseph's own. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of the land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. So Joseph has lived this long, incredible, full life. He had a lot of excitement at the beginning, a lot of confusion and frustration, but then he was second in Egypt. Pharaoh was kind to them in Egypt. He gave them the land of Goshen, which was incredible. He got to be there with his entire family. He had a wife that it seems like he cared about, and also he had two sons that he was proud of, and he got to see even his grandchildren. Perhaps it's a little bit disputed, but perhaps even his great-grandchildren. He had all these opportunities, all these wonderful things down in Egypt. But he had an acknowledgement that Egypt wasn't home. What God had promised wasn't Egypt, it was Canaan. So as blessed as he was in Egypt, he still understood that the promises to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob were about a different land, about a better land, about a place where God's people will dwell, about where this nation was going to be and how God would be among them. And that's what he was striving for. So when he dies, not seeing the fulfilled side of this promise, he says, bring my bones to the promised land. This is a faith that goes beyond the grave. And that's what happened through all his life. God was preparing him for this. Because so often, you know, when we go through trials and frustrations, sometimes it dims our faith. But what it's supposed to do is, like Joseph, increase it and strengthen it. And then when you get to the end of your life, you understand, God has been faithful to me. Surely he will be faithful in his promises here. And that's something that we can take a lot of comfort in. Because even though a lot of the world will let us down and frustrate us, God won't. Perhaps when it comes to, for us living as Americans in this country, we're really blessed to be here. We have a lot of resources. We have a lot of great things that come along with being a part of this country, but we cannot treat it like heaven. Right now we're dwelling in Goshen, sure. But it's not Canaan. It's not the place where God dwells. And that's where our aim and our focus needs to be, just like Joseph. So our faith doesn't just take us while we're dwelling here. It takes us beyond that. So faith, as it's explained in Hebrews, tells us that is the evidence of things unseen. Joseph had evidence of God being faithful to him over and over and over again, despite the trials. God was with him through all of those. And at the end of his life, he understood that God was still going to be there. So for us, that is so encouraging. That even at the end, God is going to be there. So perhaps you are sitting in your home this morning, and you're still stuck. You're in a place of frustration. The world doesn't seem to be doing well. Well, our attitude needs to be like Joseph's, that we can tell the people of the future, that we can tell future generations that perhaps the UN was not in the right position for this virus. Perhaps the government was not in the best position, but our God wasn't unaware, and our God carried us through. And our God was faithful through it. So no matter what trials they go through, they can be encouraged as well, knowing that God is still with them. If there's something that we can do for you, I know that you know, you're not here live or anything like that, but if there's a way that we can help you, please get in contact with us. If there's something that we can help you with, just reach out. Because just because we're not meeting and we're not having an assembly, it doesn't mean that God doesn't want your soul, and God doesn't want you to back. So if there's something that you can do, please contact us.